Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
And now back in making a record 20th appearance with us on Thursday Night Tailgate is our good friend and former Rams Pro Bowl quarterback and TNT Hall of Famer, Jim Everett. Jimmy, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
Hi, Jim. Chris. Hi, Chris. Hi, Bob. Hey, how ironic is that? You have on your last guest, Robin Cole. Right?
Yep.
Yeah. I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was there. My dad was a professor at the University of New Mexico, and we used to go watch his play. And
wow.
Then he goes on to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So yeah, he was a stud. I'll tell you, that guy. I mean, why he, how he picked New Mexico of all the schools, but he was by far the best athlete on the field. All the games I watching his career, I could see why the Pittsburgh Steelers one of them was man, he's dumb. And it was, here you have Robin Cole on, and I'm going, oh my God, I know him. I saw him play. He was my guy growing up. For the Lobos, it was great.
There you go. That's fantastic.
Great.
Indeed.
Small world. It's a small world. Yeah. But thanks for having me on, guys.
Jimmy, I want to start our time with you to obviously getting your thoughts on your Rams. Now that Aaron Donald is signed, sealed, and delivered, your thoughts on the Rams. Is anything short of a Super Bowl appearance going to be a disappointment for them this year?
They're stacked. I'm telling you, they're getting all the. I've never seen an 11-5 team retool and get the guys that they got and spend the money they got and still under the salary cap quite a bit. They've got a stacked team, but I always look at it like this and keep it in ready, and then hopefully the team understands it. Is that the Indianapolis 500? You sit on the pole and have to car. You got to go, all those laps and still win. So there's a bunch of laps to be played, or laps to go in this season, and it starts with Monday night against the Raiders. And I would think they have to be favored. There'd have to be some sort of upset, injuries, and then the Indianapolis 500. You have to blow an engine not to get that. But I say they're loaded. But again, other teams are going to be growing through the years. The rookies are going to contribute. I mean, who knew New Orleans with Kamara last year and Kansas City with their young running back? There's teams that are going to grow. And that's going to be household names. And who knows? Maybe someone steps up the Raiders and takes up Mac's position and does extremely well. Or maybe Mac goes up to the Bears and wrecks Aaron Rodgers quite a bit. So, I mean, a lot of things can happen. But I'd really like the chances of the Rams. And I think Vegas does too.
So give us your assessment of the Rams offense. I know Todd Gurley was your number one pick in our fantasy football draft, so I know you're high on him and for good reason. But give us your assessment of their offense.
Well, it all starts with McVay. I mean, as the coordinator, I know we lost Olsen, quarterback coach, and we lost the offensive. The title offensive coordinator, as well, but we've got two young guys in. I think it all starts with McVay, goes through the system. I think we got the right guys as far as Brandon Cooks on the outside. You got Woods coming back. You got Cooper Kupp catches everything. And I think that chemistry is going. I think the big question mark on the offense is they got the right guard that has to come in because of the position with Brown. So we got to make sure the offensive line is cohesive. And the other part is, when are the tight ends going to be involved? Because McVay is, from that old Washington system, they always had tight ends that could make plays, and there were guys, but so far, Hickey and Everett, who are in there right now, haven't really been seeing the look. But, they've been doing it with Gurley, and that's how they picked up their yards. And I tell you what, it's something pretty spectacular to see the innovation that McVay does and be able to distribute the ball to all five of the wide receivers, not all five of the ball catchers, not only wide receivers, but tailback, tight end, the different personnel groups, the matchup. I can't wait to see it. We haven't seen golf in any of the preseason games, so hopefully he's not too rusty, but I have a feeling we're going to see week one, more of the offense being a little bit more rusty than we will maybe week 6, 7, 8 when they're when they're in full tune.
And Jim, as you can imagine, I'm pretty concerned right now with the situation with Le'Veon Bell. You went through a holdout situation, sort of under different circumstances, but you understand the business side. You got sort of smacked in the face with the business side as soon as you were in the draft. But your thoughts on Le'Veon Bell and if he's doing the right thing or the wrong thing?
Well, I don't think anyone can judge except for the man himself. And Le'Veon, he's got, put it this way. I think if his franchise tag is 14.5 number, 14.5 million, which sounds like
right.
an absurd number, a number for anybody to get paid. But let's not even go there. And I've talked early, signed that. I think another 4-year extension, so they got another 6 years for an average of $15 million a year. So I'm looking at this thing, and I know that Gurley, I think, won, and Bobby Bell went 2. I would think that minimum offer would be what Todd Gurley makes for running back. But I think what Bobby Bell's trying to say is that his skill set is more in line to what top receivers make. So, Would a Sammy Watkins, who's making $16 million, would you trade Sammy Watkins for Le'Veon Bell straight up? I mean, you probably would. And, but when you're talking about impact for a team, why wouldn't Le'Veon Bell be worth $16 million? Brandon Cooks versus Le'Veon Bell. You look at that and it makes sense. But the position right now, is 14 and a half, $15 million. And I think Le'Veon Bell said, why can't I make 60? And I think he has a good argument. I think you look back a few years back, Jimmy Graham kind of made that argument as well, because tight ends were only getting paid so much, but he's like, listen, I'm an outside slot receiver. I should be making what receivers make. Yet, he never really got that through, but I think that's the type of impact that we're talking about. Impact player, one position that doesn't get paid like the other positions. And I think that's what Le'Veon Bell's doing. Is it right or wrong? It's his head, Chris, Bob. I don't even think his teammates have a really, I've heard his teammates, his offensive linemen coming out saying, oh, he should do this, or he let us down, or he did this or that. Well, this is his financial career. When the guy's retired, when he's Robin Cole's age, my age, his teammates aren't going to be judging him. But his bank account might. it's his call, and if he thinks that coming in Saturday morning so he can collect a check and save his body for one game makes a difference, then, well, that's his decision. Does he got to pay penalties or this and that? I think overall, when we look at the whole big picture, I think the franchise tag is broken. I think that whole with the collective bargaining agreement is an absolute cop-out for the owner. Because if you got a player like, let's say, for example, Aaron Donald's number one guy at the position, or arguably, but yet the franchise tag, you pay him the average of the top five. Doesn't mean the top five players. Well, that's, if you're the number one guy, that's a bargain price for the team. And then even the next year, because Aaron Donald can even tackle the position pay, they don't pay that position as much. Even when they pay 25% more over the franchise tag, that's still a bargain. I'm glad they came to a conclusion, and I think Aaron's getting paid well, doing as well, it's the right guy to pay. But I'm saying the franchise tax system is broken. And hopefully in our next collective bargaining agreement, we can do away with it.
Bob, questions for Jim?
Hey, Jim, I was telling Chris earlier in the show that you threw for 35,000 yards in your career, which comes out, I did the math, Jim, about 20 miles. What seems like a bigger accomplishment, 35,000 yards or 20 miles? A lot on your arm, no matter how you look at it.
I don't know. I mean, I know that if I was thrown for 20 miles, that doesn't include every couple steps getting hit. It's almost like, okay, let's go for a marathon, but every time you take about 5 or 6, 7 strides, you get hammered.
I don't think true, right? So there's completions either, right?
No, well, all the other ones that you threw, but threw away or threw to the other team, which God, Lord knows I did a bunch of those. Thank God it's Brett Farberly that set the record. I'll tell you this, though, I was over at Purdue, and, there's a Dale Samuels used to work there, And he would come out to me and go, hey, go break my record. And this is why I'm playing for Purdue. I look at him, I just start laughing. I mean, this is before game. He had the Purdue record of 6 interceptions during the game. Mm-hmm. And he always was another quarterback who beat his record. That's not a good pregame speech, is it?
That's beautiful.
It is.
Lord knows I tried, but, you know, I think what was most of I got pretty much most of that, you know, any time. But anyways, it does happen when you take risks and you try to, you know, project what's going on downfield. You're gonna throw the ball to the other guy. But I don't know. The 20 miles is pretty dang far. 35,000 would be far, but I tell you this, what they're doing today, I was just looking at Maddie on TV, tonight with Atlanta. He's thrown for 41,000 yards. But I know those guys aren't taking the hits like we used to. I mean, our head was open game. As long as they were within a step of you, they could light you up. So, I mean, the rule changes are so much better for these guys to be able to play a little bit later in their life. I mean, I knew when I was 35 and I retired, I mean, I was pretty broke up. These guys now are getting into their 40s, and I'm just amazed. But, you know, they're not taking the knee shots, the head shots, all the trauma shots, which is really good for the game. Maybe not good
for the side. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, Jim, about this situation in New York this week with the kid Davis Webb, who was supposed to be Eli Manning's backup. The kid from California seems to be a highly touted guy when they got him a couple years ago. They gave him a 4-year deal, et cetera. And then, kind of surprisingly, they let him go, Jim. And from what I'm gathering, from what some coaches said and from what analysts say around here, it was kind of because of his decision making, the fact that he probably couldn't throw the short pass quick enough and be as accurate as they thought. I mean, is this a lot different than it was 30 years ago because of the shorter passing game? Why do you think he just kind of lost favor, Jim?
Well, okay, let's put it a little bit more generic, and it's kind of counter to Jared Goff, and that's because they both came out of the same system.
Mm-hmm.
And Webb was after him, and actually, I think he played a year or whatever, and put some kicks after. But that offensive system, the Red Raider offensive system, is totally different than what we're running the pros. And that's what Carson Wentz went through up when he was playing in the South Dakota place. They were running a pro offense. And so they're supposed to look at Carson and go, you get it. You know what you got to read. You know where to turn the line. You know, but in the Red Raider offense, don't. And that was one of the big gambles on Jared Goff, because those guys coming from that type of system have to make a huge learning curve, which I was with Jared when he was doing it. And it was deer in the headlights look, but he's pretty savvy. Real savvy, and he's getting it, and thank God he's got a guy like McVay up in his head to be able to do that stuff. But I don't think Webb was, when you look at, I think maybe, if you look at maybe more of a system type guy, I wasn't there judging his throws or his talent and seeing all different types of things, but I'm just assuming that if Brad Shermer is saying, you can't play for me, there's good reason. So, I mean, because he's...
Jim, one more before we let you go, and I got to get your thoughts on your Boilermakers. Finished 7-6 last year in Jeff Brown's first season. Lost a tough one last weekend to Northwestern. What are your expectations for your Purdue Boilermakers this season?
Well, that Northwestern game, well, actually, they were just giving it away in the first half, but they did a mighty job coming back. I really like that young receiver. I think they're looking at a similar type record. That's what we're looking for. I thought, projecting before the season, and I knew they were going to be underdogs with Northwestern. I thought they'd get eight wins, and I'm still going to hang with that.
So, Jim, we got our fantasy football draft like we talked about a minute ago. We got that underway. That's over with now. We're ready for first game of the season. You went Gurley like we talked about. You went Tyreek Hill in the second round. You went Tom Brady in the third round. Overall thoughts, as always, your team got the highest grade in Yahoo Sports for following the draft, got an A-. So you're always the top guy with an A or an A-. Feel strong about your team? You happy?
I do. And you didn't even talk about my backup running back, who I picked up Penny and Chubb, too, because I really think there's some upside with those guys once the season gets going on. Like the Indianapolis 500 discussion, let's wait till, you know, what? you know, 100, because I think those guys will be turning it on. Hey, what was your grade, by the way, Chris?
I got a C. A little disappointed in the C, but, you know, they knocked me because I took Edelman, and then I feel like, you know, Edelman's a guy I'm going to stash on my bench that'll pay dividends week 5 through, you know, 16. So, and then they knocked me for Will Fuller with the Texans because he's a little nicked up, but he'll be fine coming into, you know, weeks 4 and 5. So I got knocked for that, but I feel confident about my team. Anytime, you know, like speaking of Boilermakers, anytime Drew Brees is your quarterback, you got to feel pretty good about yourself.
I like that pick. I really do like that pick, and he's going to go and then bring a Lamar there to back him up. I just think that's beautiful all the way around, no matter, you know, I don't know how many more years Drew's going to play. Him and Tom Brady both, I mean, they're 40 plus years old, playing ball. You know, I'm going to go drink the water they're drinking.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Let our listeners know, how can they stay up to date with all the things you're doing, follow you online and on social media?
Come over, follow me on Twitter. That's where I'm usually at. And like I say, at @Jim_Everett. Most of the stuff, you know, we talk current events, we talk all NFL sports. I say humorous most of the time, and out of line the rest of that. So anyway, follow me. I'm over at the NFL alumni. I'm helping them out on the boards. We're trying to get the program. I know we know the CBA is coming up. We know the union. We know the NFL. We're actually going to be clean, and we've got a bunch of stuff that we're doing to help retired guys, current guys, make sure that everything's going to be, you know, copacetic and move forward, because it's a good game. I don't know if you agree on all the rule changes, this and that, but we got to do something to make sure that our youth football is protected too.
Indeed.
Man, I tell you what, this is always one of my favorite shows to be on. 20 times. I can't wait to do 20 more, you guys. This is always great. Look forward to things. Have a great season, and the Rams have a great season. And, It'll be fun. I mean, a lot of people talk about LA Super Bowl. And I don't know about Chargers fans out there. And I know there are few and far between places out of San Diego, but that would be kind of cool.
Well, yeah, it would be an interesting thing. I don't think there's much of a chance in it, but it certainly would be interesting to have an all LA Super Bowl.
You
can't thank you enough for all your time and for being a guest 20 times, brother. It's always a privilege for us to get to spend some time with you.
All right. Hey, Bob, don't put up with Chris too much. Just call him out, because that C grade is actually quite high.
I'm going to try my best, Jim. It's tough. All right.
Okay, buddy. Suck it.
See you, Jim.
Take care.
That is former Rams Pro Bowl quarterback, Jim Everett. Bob, you know, when you look back at all the things that Jim has done, and you Hall of Fame. He's in the Purdue Hall of Fame. He's in the Peach Bowl Hall of Fame. He's in our Hall of Fame. And, pretty soon I gotta imagine you're gonna see his name and number up there in when the Rams get their new stadium all put together, that he's gotta be right there with guys in their Hall of Fame as well. What a great player he was.
Yeah, it's such a great time speaking with him. And, you know, we go back 20 times. I mean, he's on speed dial on the phone with us. So, but he, you know, when you think about it, I mean, I just had such great memories. My father loved him. Because my father was one of these guys, he loved guys in the 80s and 90s that just threw the ball and put it in the air. And Everett was good for 500 passes every year, and the whole Flip Miranders to the Ram days, and great memories. And then, of course, to now to do shows with him and pick his brain and a guy and get to know him as a true scholar, too. He's not just a funny guy. He's a very smart man. It's an honor, and there's a reason why he's a Hall of Famer, right, Chris?
That's exactly right.